Welcome again, everyone, to our program today. Over the next hour, we're going to be looking at the role of text mining at Boehringer Ingelheim Pharmaceuticals. Now, many of you know that text mining is beginning to really establish its place across the life sciences as a way for researchers to analyze quickly enormous amounts of literature, including not only published articles, but also conference abstracts, patents, and clinical data, all to help inform and guide R&D. From drug discovery and clinical trial development to drug safety monitoring and competitive intelligence, text mining has many important applications for life sciences companies. Our agenda today is pretty well packed, and we're going to try to get to, as I say, your questions at the very end of the program. If you do have an immediate question regarding clarification, we'll try to address those throughout, but we'll save the questions for the end because there's a lot to get to. We're going to look at the whole reason behind text mining, what its potential is for your organization. And our guest is going to give you the benefit of some of his real-world experience providing outcomes through text analysis. And we'll see the variety of ways that one can approach this, the importance of mixing data and its impact, as well as the future of text mining. We'll get a look through the crystal ball as to where all this is taking us. And looking forward to that over the next hour. For those of you not familiar with Copyright Clearance Center and our subsidiary RightsDirect, which is based in the Netherlands, we are global leaders in content workflow and rights licensing technology. CCC provides anytime, anywhere content access, usage rights, and information management while promoting and protecting the interests of copyright holders. Since 2008, CCC has been named one of the top 100 companies that matter most in the digital content industry by eContent Magazine, and in a recent outsell report, we were named one of 10 to watch in text and data mining. CCC serves more than 35,000 customers around the world and 15,000 copyright holders, managing more than 950 million rights from some of the world's most sought-after journals, books, blogs, movies, and more. With that, though, we want to bring on our very special guest for the program, John Hill, who joins us today from Richfield, Connecticut, where he is principal scientist in computation biology at Boehringer Ingelheim. John Hill, welcome to our webinar.
Thanks very much for having me, Chris.
Well, we're looking forward to talking with you because you really do, as I mentioned at the beginning, have some wonderful insights that you have gleaned through your own real-world experience working in text mining. And we'll tell people that you are, as we say, principal scientist for the computational biology group at Boehringer Ingelheim, with a focus on new target concept discovery from public and proprietary data. John Hill obtained an MS in applied genomics from the University of Connecticut, as well as a master's in library and information science from Southern Connecticut State University. You have over 12 years' experience in the pharmaceutical industry, and your current research, John Hill, focuses on understanding disease mechanisms in inflammatory and renal diseases through next-generation sequencing analysis and analysis of databases and unstructured text. And John, you know, I like to think of you as the accidental text miner because this is not a field that you intended to get into, but sort of step by step, you really have gotten deeper into it all. And I think that's what makes your presentation so important today because that's an experience likely to be shared by colleagues and the people attending this webinar today as text mining becomes more important to them. So let's get started, John. Give us the basics, and why is text mining necessary in today's research environment?
Something that you were getting to, Chris, was the fact that I'd kind of gotten into this field a little bit later. So my training is more in biology, and I think that I'd start to recognize the need for this really just from digging through journal articles. The scope of the scientific information that's available out there today has really a scope that's unparalleled. We're talking about, when I just checked the numbers this morning, Medline abstracts are up to 22 million different abstracts. PubMed Central, which is a publicly available full text resource, has over 3.8 million full text articles. And really, in parallel with this development of more and more publicly available scientific literature, the search tools have sort of evolved to help people retrieve which articles might be interesting. So you might be able to identify those few hundred articles that are going to help inform your question. But the problem is that the synthesis of what's in those articles really still required a lot of reading and a lot of time just slogging through them. So I think that part of the appeal of text mining and text analysis is that they let you aggregate knowledge from these resources in ways that would be totally impractical if you were planning on going through and reading all the things that you might get from search results. So if we think about, if we just go to the next slide, how this plays into the full process, the way that I view text mining, it's sort of, it starts with search, but you can really exit the process at different stages depending on how thoroughly you want to go through things and how much human effort you can put into the curation afterwards. So one logical thing you can do is you would develop your queries in text mining tools, and maybe if you get a very small number of results back, or it's absolutely critical that you've gone through everything in the highest degree of detail, you might just treat them as search results, retrieve the full articles, and then spend your time reading and assimilating that information. But I think where text mining starts to become more interesting is when you further process the data that you've identified start to summarize or extract the data. So rather than just getting sort of a list of references and saying, well, here's one article you could go after or another one, you can extract the pieces of context around your search hits that can help you really hone in on the piece that's most interesting. And I think that this is actually, it's for sure helpful to scientists who are looking to digest the results, but it's also even helpful as you develop the queries to better understand why you're getting the search results you're getting and how you can improve them. And sort of the final logical extension of this is to remove the person entirely from the first steps, well, after you've done the query results, and start to just impose a structure on this. So this could be something where, for example, if you're looking at the involvement of particular drugs in particular diseases, sort of the classic way you might do a review is you might get all the papers that refer to these different things and start reading them. An alternate approach is that you figure out a query that best identifies drug-disease relationships. So a list of drugs, a list of diseases, linking words like prescribed for or first-line therapy or all these kinds of things. And then when you believe that you've refined that query to the point where you trust the results, then those results can go directly into another structured resource. Or maybe they'd be slightly curated, but they can go into another database that then lets you perform queries on that. So I think that you can sort of run the gamut depending on where you want to put resources and how comprehensive you want to be.
And John Hill, the underlying theme or one of the underlying themes of your message today is really the reasons behind text mining and why those who are in your shoes at other companies around the world really ought to be explaining and evangelizing the value of all of this. And if they do that and someone says to them, well, aren't you just talking about search? They really aren't. They're talking about something much more than search.
Yes, that's true. So I think that that is an important distinction, because this does get confused with search pretty regularly, because there's components of it that are very similar. I mean, for sure, the query development process, understanding the language around how you're going to process these things, that there's definitely parallels between those. But I think the advantage here is not just in the retrieval and identification of articles, but what you do with that data after.
Right. And John, we've already had a question about the sources for text data mining. And here you've got a really, I think, comprehensive answer to all this. We are speaking about here much more than scientific and scholarly published articles.
That's correct. So the source of the data that you actually use for this, many of the tools are reasonably agnostic to the kind of data that you put in. But depending on the data source, it can be simpler or more complicated to sort of structure that data in a way that's amenable to text mining. So if I start with the simplest case, something like abstracts from medical literature, if you're going into something like PubMed or Embase or Medline, those are cases where you can access all the data in those resources in an extremely structured format. You know that the titles and abstracts are fielded in a particular way, and it's very easy to both first get the data and then process it in a way where it can be indexed and searched by all these different tools. This gets more complicated. Both the less structured the data gets, And also the less consistent the metadata becomes. So when you go down to something like full text articles can become quite a bit more challenging because publishers may have different ways of handling metadata. Even accessing the full text in the first place can be quite a bit more challenging because it ranges from something like PubMed Central where you can download it to cases where you can deal with an aggregator that's sort of got a whole bunch of full text, to cases where it may be a one-off and you may be dealing with a book or an individual publisher. That becomes very challenging. I would say that the other things in between here, things like patents. Patents are for sure a lot better structured than maybe other full text. So there are many aggregators who can provide patent information in a way that's really suitable for full text. The language in patents is sort of its own thing. So I think that you definitely need to have a particular expertise to deal with patent language. And for sure, you can't take a query designed for the medical literature, plug it seamlessly into a search over patents and expect to get a good consistent result. Where this becomes a little bit more Wild West, I think, is when you start getting into very uniquely structured data. So a key example for any large company would be internal reports or presentations. So many of the tools for text mining are either capable of indexing things like PowerPoint and Word, or there's many great tools that are available, even open source tools for converting Word documents, or at least extracting the text from Word documents to enable them to be processed as plain old text. But these cases, there's so much divergence for internal reports, sometimes even within an organization, that can be a bit of a hurdle just getting your data all in the right spot and structured the right way. And then the last, of course, is web resources, which are a fantastic source of information and can also be extremely frustrating to deal with, both because of the complications of, I guess, comprehensively retrieving web resources around what you're interested in, and then processing the data in a way that lets it be searched after.
Right. And John, so those two types of data that you've been speaking about there, the structured and the unstructured, one needs to approach them separately, but ultimately bring them together. Talk about the value there.
Right. So here when I'm talking about structured and unstructured data, structured data is what I would consider more traditional database kind of data. So this is, in my particular area of research, which is a lot of early drug discovery, this is really, there's some fantastic both public and commercial sources of structured data. So you could think of something like Ontrogene or the databases on mouse phenotypes that are provided by Jackson Labs, or commercial products like some of the Thomson products like Thomson Integrity. So the nice thing about these structured resources is that they're structured. So your queries can be very consistent. You can rely on standard identifiers. So when you look up a particular gene in Ontrogene, you know how to specify it, and you know for sure that if you get a result, you're getting all that's in there about that gene. So when we get data from text-based resources, one thing that I really like about some of the text mining tools is that it can let you take this sort of mess of text data and normalize or structure the data in a way that lets it be combined with structured data. So that seems a little bit abstract, but maybe a way to explain it would be if you have a list of articles and you're interested in gene disease associations. So you pull out all the gene names, but maybe in an article, a gene can be referred to five different ways. So sometimes it'll be TNF, sometimes tumor necrosis factor, sometimes tumor necrosis factor alpha, sometimes TNFA, all these different variations exist in the literature. So what text analysis can let you do is it can let you do a search that recognizes those many different synonyms in the text, and then you can normalize those and say, anytime I see one of these synonyms, I'm going to assume in this case that they mean TNF, which is the canonical human gene symbol. Once you have that sort of bridge, then you can take all the interesting things that you found out of the unstructured text data and then link them back to all the things that you know about TNF from the structured data. So you can know a whole other list of identifiers. You could know, for example, what a mouse knockout that doesn't have TNF looks like, what their phenotype is. So this way is it's a very straightforward way to provide a bridge between the different resources and to get the most out of your structured data. Another example that's maybe more broadly applicable than pharma is to extract company names and start to normalize those to link with competitive intelligence databases. So at least in a lot of patents or publications, you'll get a company identifier. But the problem is that sometimes many companies have multiple subsidiaries that have gone through mergers, acquisitions, all sorts of things over the years. So you may see a company like Roche referred to five different ways. And so what this normalization approach can do for you again is to say, okay, all these papers for this company, they're talking about these diseases. Now we can say all these different companies are really, in fact, one company, and we can connect it back with our competitive intelligence databases that looks at maybe the pipeline for the company and says, they're publishing a lot recently. Do they have a historic interest in these diseases? Is this a new thing? And so it really lets you put your text mining results in context, I think.
Right. And John, what I think is interesting there is just how that kind of effort, I mean, it's perhaps obvious to say this, John, but really no one could take on that kind of research, that kind of investigation of published material on their own. It really is important to think about the power of text mining, the power that the machines and the tools really bring to all of this. This is a new level of understanding of all that published material.
Exactly. So I think many of these things are the process I'm describing of going through a company and normalizing the names. That's certainly not unique to text analytics. If you have a lot of time and you're really focused on one company, you could do that, I think, quite well with search. The advantage here is that you're really able to look at these things wholesale. So when I say genes in this case, I'm not just talking about TNF-alpha. I'm talking about any gene or any disease or any company name. So I think that throughput really gives you the leg up.
Right. Well, we are speaking right now with John Hill, who is a principal scientist with Boehringer Ingelheim in Connecticut, and a presentation looking at the role of text mining in John's work and at Boehringer Ingelheim. If you have questions for John, please use the chat box in the lower right-hand corner of the screen. Let us know if you need a clarification on any particular point. We'll get to as many of the questions as we can at the end of the program. But John, at this point, we really want to understand better how it's done. There are a variety of processes that you can approach text mining with. And so tell us about code-based processes.
Yes. So there's sort of three categories I'd like to cover. And the first are what I consider more programming language or code-based processes. So these are cases where you're doing your text mining through a programming language. And I'd say they're extremely common in academic environments, and they also shine particularly when you either have high throughput as an outcome or a desired result, or you're really interested in some sort of specialized result, specialized processing. So if you're interested in calculating very simple metrics, so a common metric that people might see that's associated with text analysis would be something like co-occurrence. So this is where you'd say if I've got two sorts of categories that I'm interested in, say genes and diseases. I want to go through abstracts of whatever kind, and then I want to say how many abstracts do I get both an occurrence of one particular gene and one particular disease? So this is a really simple thing. It's just a set overlap, and you can do this without any specialized text mining software. You could just use a standard scripting language like Python or Perl. Now, there's also a lot of more sophisticated processing that can be done with specialized libraries. So one set of problems I think is pretty interesting is when I'd mentioned gene annotation, I was kind of talking about it in sort of the search way of a dictionary-based approach where you'd say, here's all the synonyms for the genes I'm interested in. Well, what papers mention those synonyms? So it's a very basic approach. It works pretty well most of the time. But there's also a more sophisticated version of this. There's actually a set of challenges called the biocreative challenges where people were interested in identifying algorithms to say, in this abstract, where are all the mentions of genes, regardless of what the genes are? So the first goal is identifying what entities are genes, whether or not the text is right. And then the second part would be saying, once you know where the genes are in the text, what particular genes are they? So these really specialized approaches, I think, can outperform sort of the generic synonym-based approaches. Another case that I would say is kind of a specialized case would be name to structure for chemistry. So one open source tool I'm describing here is OSCAR, but there's also commercial tools. Cambridge Soft has a very good one. And what this is if you've described a chemical name in free text by sort of the standard chemical naming procedures, you can actually tick that name, process it through a program, process the text through a program, and then come up with a picture of what the structure looks like. So this can let you do things in text that would be totally impractical without it, like a substructure search where you say, I'm interested in matching all the papers that have a chemical that has a benzene ring in it. So those are the sorts of things you can do with this kind of pre-processing. Another example would be something like sentiment analysis, which is a whole other, it's a little outside my area of expertise, but that's something which is a very specialized kind of text mining, where people can look through social media posts and say, oh, well, this person read this book. Did they like it or not like it? And it's actually a really fascinating area because it's not something that you can handle that well just with synonyms again. Because there's a lot of context, things like sarcasm crop up in social media a lot. So it's a really interesting set of problems. And one other thing I should mention as a note here is I'm describing this as code-based processes, but somebody earlier actually mentioned that there are some pipeline tools which I think fall into the same general bucket. So an example would be KNIME, which is K-N-I-M-E. That's an open source tool which it's almost more like a visual approach to programming. So you'd have kind of this workflow that looks like a flow chart, and each box describes a manipulation to the data. Pipeline Pilot is another one with this. So I would say that those are another category where I think they fall into the code-based processes bucket, sort of because they're more general purpose. You can glue them together in a very specialized way, but it's really very modular. So here's just a quick example, and again, the code isn't really that important here. I just felt like I had to put some code up for a code-based approach. So this is just a simple example of co-occurrence between diseases and genes. So the idea is I've done a search. I have different entities, and I've got a list of the PubMed IDs that were recognized for each entity, and then you can just do a set intersection to say, okay, where do these co-occur? And what you'd get at the end is you could do something simple like a clustering diagram. This is something, I think I generated this one with Spotfire quite a while ago, but there's many, many tools, both commercial and open source, that you can use for these. And what this does is it would group things that are similar in one category so that they're next to each other. So, across the metric. So here we'd see that diseases, which are sort of on the x-axis, diseases which mention similar genes in the same abstract would cluster together. And sort of, it's pretty naive approach, but it actually does a decent job of putting somewhat similar diseases in one aspect or another together. So you get pulmonary fibrosis next to fibrotic diseases and ulcerative colitis next to Crohn's. So nothing too surprising there, but it sort of illustrates the general concept. I was just going to say, a thing I like about co-occurrence is this is extremely generalizable. So again, no matter what your industry, if you have categories of things that you can describe in terms of another thing, you could apply this approach.
Well, John, I was just going to say that, you know, from the outside looking in, what this slide speaks to me about is something I heard discussed at the recent PSP conference in Washington, the Professional and Scholarly Publishing Conference there. And they were speaking about the increasing importance of data and text mining in publishing. And while many of the publishers today are looking to hire data scientists, they are also looking to hire what they were calling data artisans, people who are going to be able to take all this information and show it graphically to really illustrate. There's going to be some tremendous insights gleaned if we can really begin to see these results in ways other than just numbers and alphabetically. And so this graph, I think, really points to that. It gives you a quick look at something which may point in the direction that you want to do more research on. So I just find that really quite interesting. puts the way that everybody would really probably want to go about this that might appear at first glance to be the most user-friendly is, of course, GUI-based tools.
For sure, yeah. So GUI-based tools, I think, are they're nice in that they definitely make it more approachable to do some of this kind of research. And what you'd find is a lot of times these will help you organize your queries. They'll help you organize your indices. I think that they offer a certain amount of convenience, but, of course, a lot of them still have significant training requirements to actually get up to speed and use them effectively. I think that something else that's not really a split so much between GUI and code-based, but is true in practice, is that many of the GUI-based tools are more commercially supported than the code-based tools. And so this has pluses and minuses. I mean, for sure, you wind up with an additional overhead. You may have to license the software year to year. But something that is on the desirable side is that you usually get quite a bit better support and training. I think for the code-based ones, a lot of times the online documentation can be excellent, but it's not quite like having a vendor on the other end of the phone that you can just call up and say, well, okay, I'm trying this out. Why isn't this working? So the key, I would say one key example of this is probably Lingwomatics. This is, I think, particularly commonly used in pharma, and I think they're starting to get a little more broadly used in healthcare. But this is one that we've been working with for a while. So this is just sort of a basic example of what a Lingwomatics search looks like. And what you'd see is on the top box, we have a list of indices to the left. In the center, there's this sort of staging area where you see the red box that describes a query. And just to walk through sort of the visual metaphor here, it's really a series of nested containers where you're saying, okay, here's a region that I want to search in, and then I want to have this sort of structure within that region for the things I'm matching. And then you keep adding in these building blocks. So if I sort of interpret this from the inside out, you've got an outer region, which is shown by the period at the upper left of the window. That specifies a sentence. Then within that sentence, you have an ordered phrase. So almost like you'd see as a quoted phrase if you were using a traditional search engine. And then within that, from left to right, well, on the left, you see there's what would be called a class. So this is for a gene or protein. And this functions kind of like an ontology of different search terms. So in this case, I'm actually specifying this could be any gene in this bucket. But of course, depending on where you cut the ontology, you can get more specificity or less. To the right, there's a similar thing for diseases. This is at the far right. And again, this is interpreted generally as here's a whole dictionary of disease terms, and those are all treated as one box. So this is actually, I think this part of it's very nice because it sort of enables reuse in a way that's sort of difficult if you're explicitly specifying all the terms in your search. But of course, it can abstract out some things, so you have to go back in and figure out when you need to troubleshoot this. And then in the middle, similar to how you can define classes for generally different noun sort of entity things, you can also have these more linguistic things like a prepositional phrase or the verbal relation for sort of is, be, or was. Now, if we execute a search like this, then you get an output shown on the bottom where you have something, and this is without really modification. I've just presented a subset of it, of course, but you have all the different columns describing the aspects of your query, so genes, the biomarker phrase, disease, a link to the document, and then to the right, you get the hit that was actually recognized for this particular thing. So this is sort of where I think you start to get a sense of how you can use this for data extraction. So because, of course, you can dump this out into an Excel file or something like that after, and then you would have a nice list of genes by diseases. Or you could take the extracted hits and then use those while you're refining your query to get a sense of, are there any problematic words or synonyms that are really giving you a lot of false hits? This makes it very transparent.
Right. And, you know, John Hill, we're encouraging people to think about the ways that text mining can benefit their own research efforts. And certainly one way they can go about it is, as you call them here, self-serve models, really a kind of DIY. Tell us about how that can work for them.
Sure. So I think the distinction here is between the first two sort of models I presented for this are really based on the idea that you have a scientist or a researcher with a question. They would contact the expert in text mining. That person would interpret it into a way to do a query. Then they would run it on their system, which is totally inaccessible to the researcher, and then provide the results. So I think that where you want to switch to a self-serve model, so sometimes we'll get queries that crop up again and again with variations. So it's an example I was thinking about before is around new target season. So a few times a year we all talk about, more than that now, but which new drug targets do we want to go after? And so scientists will come with questions. They'll say, well, we've looked through all these expression databases to see where our target's expressed, but we want to make sure that we didn't miss anything else in the literature. So the text miner could take their gene of interest, go into the literature, and form a very good query for gene expression. Then the next week, they may get another target, but the same question, where is my gene expressed? They go through that search, provide it back. Once this happens enough, you sort of say, well, okay, the only thing that's really changing here is the target. So in this case, it's worth your while to develop an actual self-serve system where you've taken whatever tool you're using to actually define the query and get the results. You abstract out that one little part, in this case, the target, and then you provide usually a web interface so that the researcher can interact with that directly and see their results. So the downside to this is it can take a little bit of time to get off the ground, although for sure it's getting easier, but it does ease the burden of these constant requests. So an example of this was actually developed by a former colleague of mine, Raul Rodriguez Esteban. This was a system that he developed to answer that very question of how you look for gene expression in the literature for different targets. So what he'd done here is he provided the scientists with an extremely simple user interface. I'm talking about a single text box where they punch in their gene and hit go. And then what this would do is behind the scenes, it would go to a series of results that were compiled from Lingwomatics through both Conference Abstract and Medline, and then processed by means of automatically scheduled scripts to deliver HTML reports. So here, from the end user's side, this is a very straightforward tool. It's really easy to interpret the results. They get enough context that they feel like they can understand what search was done. But aside from the initial development, there's very little maintenance required from the person who's doing the analysis. Well, when the system's up and running, there's no real intervention on a per target basis. So I'd like to, I just want to go into a couple, these are sort of more specific examples of how we would actually use text mining in practice. And they're still, they're written to be a bit general, but I think they would still illustrate how you wind up with sort of different bottlenecks in your approach to text mining, depending on the specific question that's being asked. So as I mentioned, new target discovery, a really common set of questions is just that you have a scientist who's started to read about a target. They have one or two different papers. Maybe they've gone through a reference or two. But they want to make sure that they've done a comprehensive job of evaluating this target before they go and make a presentation on it to their peers. So typically what would happen is the scientist would approach the text miner. I would say that for these new target requests, this is actually most commonly handled by email because they are pretty routine. So in this case, the scientist would say, I'm interested in new target alpha in psoriasis. That's the disease I'm working on, and I want to understand the context. Once the text miner thinks that they know what the scientist wants, sort of they've got a good sense of the question, usually a first step then would be to build a good list of aliases for the gene. And this has gotten to be a lot better. I think there's better structured synonym dictionaries now than there were, but it's still not quite that we trust the dictionaries outright. So usually if you want to do a very comprehensive job, you pull from a couple different dictionaries. And then you might even do things like common substitutions. I mean, simple things like If you're searching for CCR1, you might also put in CCRI just in case there's an OCR error or something like that. Anyway, so once you have a decent list of aliases, you conduct a search, and then this is where you iterate a little bit, depending on how many results you're getting back, because you really want to deliver a set to the scientist that's comprehensive, but not overwhelming. And so the balance there you strike is, if you're not getting enough results to really make any sense of it, then you would either add aliases if you have the option to do that, or you can also expand the text resources that you're looking over. So maybe their first pass was just in PubMed, then you expand it to conference abstracts, maybe eventually you expand it to full text if you really need to. If, on the other hand, you've got too much stuff, this is common if you've got an older target that's maybe being repositioned, so there's a lot of literature out there, you really have to focus on, why are you getting so many hits? Is it because you've got a bad alias in there and you're getting junk that's not at all related to your target? In that case, you can refine the aliases. Sometimes that'll mean outright eliminating an alias. Sometimes it might just be a case of adding a little bit of context around that alias to eliminate the bad ones. You might add more terms that are specific to the disease of interest. You might also do things like limit the date range if they're really just interested in the current stuff. And how aggressively you pursue these things really depends on how many results you're getting back. Right. Once you think you're in the ball. Yep.
Oh, no, go ahead. Sorry, John. I thought you were done. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Sorry. Well, the last part's actually pretty straightforward, because once you have just the right number of results, they go into a spreadsheet and then you share it with the scientist. If they've never dealt with text mining before, then we might meet with them just to explain things. But more commonly, people are familiar enough with it now that we can just send them the results.
You know, John, what I was just trying to get to there was, I was listening to you describe this process, is, you know, we're hearing a lot about the way that the machines are doing the digging, but there's still an important role of, thankfully, for the human being in all of this, the text miner, who is the person that takes all of that raw material and shapes it into the bricks and the other building materials that will be the foundation that the researcher is then going to go build on. So this is really as much a story about the tools as it is about the individuals, the text miners, and how they use them.
Yeah, that's really true. So I think that for most cases currently, I don't think the text analysis, unless you've got a really amazing query that you've spent quite a bit of time perfecting, if you're just doing these more ad hoc queries, then a lot of times you do have to still invest a little bit of time into both refining the query and also potentially into curating the results. Because I think that especially if you're winding up with too much stuff at the end, then it's overwhelming for the researcher. So I think there's still an important intervention there. And the one, I guess, a piece of advice I have there is that you sort of have to know your own limits of expertise. So if it's, you may have to meet more often with a scientist and be more comfortable asking them to help you with some curation if it's a field that you're totally unfamiliar with. If you are familiar with the field, then a lot of times it's much easier for you to refine the queries and to arrive at solid results.
Right, and really that's the point then. You need to know, particularly with full text, when as we've begun to describe, there are so many choices to make. You need to know when to dig deeper, where to go. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so... And actually, I noticed in the chat box before that somebody was interested in looking for why you would use abstracts versus full text. And I guess what I should say is that the vast majority of the time, I would say that abstracts are sufficient for getting a decent read on results. So if I just want to know, what's the landscape around my target? What cell types has it been looked at in? What diseases is it associated with? A lot of times, abstracts, I think, are quite good for that. And the nice thing about it is that they're easy to get, and you get less noise in your results because you're already sort of looking over things that people have decided are important enough to put in that kind of front line. Full text, on the other hand, sometimes it's hard to aggregate. It can be costly if you don't license the particular journal articles. You can wind up paying per article, which can be expensive. But there's some queries where I found there's really just no substitute for it. Particularly, two examples that stand out in my mind. One would be if you're interested in looking for materials and methods. So if you say you're working with a scientist who's really interested in doing something where they're trying a new protein purification, And so they want to go through articles and see how people purified this protein in the past. What reagents are they using? That's something where nobody's going to put in the short space that they have for an abstract that they used a particular column from a particular vendor. So that's a case where if you don't have access to full text, you miss it. Another one would be something like systems biology models. So if you've got something like the T cell, you could say, well, if I want to know whether Th17 cells are associated with disease, that's going to be a frontline thing. That'll be in the abstracts. But if I want to know how many of a certain kind of receptor is on average on the surface of a T cell, or how many T cells are on average in the bloodstream of a person with one disease versus another, these kinds of numeric parameters can be very challenging or impossible sometimes to get from abstracts. So that's a case where I think that the full text really shines. And for people who want to get started with this, you can get PubMed Central. It's structured and it's freely available. And I think it provides a really great starting point if you just want to see, like, well, how are the results I'm getting different? But the liability of this is that coverage is still pretty low. I mean, you're talking about, what, less than a fifth probably of Medline. So if you really care about being comprehensive for some of these parameters, then you're going to have to figure out an alternate system to get full text. So with this, I'm going to present maybe a couple other sort of stranger workflows. First is around systems biology. So in this case, if you have a scientist who's interested in building a mechanistic model around a drug concept, so this is pharmacokinetics and pharmacodynamics. This would be something where if you're interested in figuring out, well, how long does a drug stick around in a person's system after it's been administered? That would be, they would build these models that might help them project how different doses behave in a person. But to build these models, they need to know a lot of characteristics about the system. How much of the drug targets in the system, how frequently it's turned over, on what cell types it's expressed. So this is a case where full text, I think, is entirely appropriate. Now, the key here compared to the targets one is that we have to start off with a search strategy just to build the corpus of full text documents and identify them. And this is a case where maybe even more than the last one, the question of how much stuff you get becomes very important. I think that practically, I haven't really built a full text corpus that's bigger than 60,000 articles or something like that. And that's on the way high side. I think that it's much more common to build something in the range of hundreds. Probably hundreds is ideal. So, here, this is a case where you really want to make sure that you're imposing some limits, either by refining your aliases, adding cellular context, or limiting the journals that you're looking through. Now, the catch here is that it's sort of a fine line to walk because, especially if you're identifying these articles not through a full text search, you can wind up in a bit of a mess because you have to make sure you draw a broad enough net that you're not excluding things that'll be helpful in your later search. Once you get through that and you've got the right amount of stuff, you build the corpus and you conduct your search. Now, the search here can be a lot simpler because for many of these models, the scientists are asking for the same stuff over and over. It's sort of like a gene expression problem. So really, you can do the search. You make sure that you're covering all the parameters. And then you may go back. You may even have to build another corpus if you're really missing one parameter that's critical. And then when you've decided that you've got all you're going to be able to get, that's when you assemble them and send it out. Okay, so realize I don't have a lot of time left, so I'm going to go through this very quickly. This is just an example of what you do with slightly messier, less structured data. So for example, say a scientist is going to a really big medical conference and they want to identify talks of interest from the program book. Once you figure out what they're interested in, then you have to figure out, well, how do I even get the abstracts? Is it something that I can get from a commercial aggregator of abstracts, something like MIS? Maybe it's not indexed. Maybe it's too far in advance of the conference, or it's not a conference they deal with. If it's not available, then you have to figure out, well, okay, can I get abstract books online? How do I do that? Once you build the corpus, then this is a case where I think the scientific questions that are being asked are a little bit not less standard. So this is probably more of a case where you'd actually meet with the scientist, work with them to develop the search strategy, and then sort of iterate a little bit to confirm the results.
Right. Well, you know, John, this is the point when I think people, having heard your rather thorough description of how text mining can be approached and the tools that are available to do it, the question naturally arises, well, is it right for my organization? And we mentioned at the top, I think of you as the accidental text miner, because you didn't intend to get into this field. Your own background is in library sciences as well as in biology, but you really began to learn about it step by step and appreciated the value. And I think that's made you such a powerful evangelist for all of this. And that point of evangelism is something you want to share with this audience today, that if they're going to become involved in text mining, or if they're going to try to, prompt the organization to begin to use text mining for research, they have to be really proactive. They have to emphasize the communication piece of this, and they've got to be pretty transparent about the results they get.
Yeah, for sure. So I think that to some of your points around that, I think that a lot of the value for text mining is really comprehensiveness. So there are many aspects of text mining that can be implemented in a less comprehensive way, but where text mining really shines is the ability to go through these extremely large data sets and summarize them. I think that you can also argue that in smaller cases, text mining, if your organization sort of has built the infrastructure, then you can deliver similar results to what you would get through a more manual process, but just much more efficiently. And you mentioned that I come from sort of a different background in biology. I've worked with a number of text miners over the years who, it seems like they come from a variety of disciplines, computer engineering for sure, library science. I've worked with some domain matter experts who sort of get into it from either an interest in biology, in patent law, things like that. And people who are doing text mining can fit into different spots in the organization. I'm part of the research organization working in a group that deals with very different disciplines like sequence analysis. But we also have a group at the German site who's more centrally located. And I think that it really depends on where your organization wants to prioritize some of these resources. So, I mean, for sure, one advantage of centralization is that there's tons of applications of text mining, not just in research, but in medicine or marketing, these kinds of things. So I think that it's good to think about the structure of things organizationally, to how you can leverage text mining for very different applications. Sort of underpinning it, if you're interested in getting started with text mining, I think it helps to be good at doing basic search. So if you're really good with databases and navigating Boolean search and that kind of thing, that's sort of a really foundational approach. I think if you have programming skills, they're not absolutely necessary. I should say that outright. But they do increase the options that you have for tools. And similarly, if you have domain area expertise, you'll find that you can have a much faster cycle time when you're talking with your colleagues. So you might understand and translate their concerns into a query a bit better. One thing that you can find sort of frustrating about text mining is that when you have that final paper in hand that really describes exactly the finding that the scientist wanted, the whole process sort of drops away, and really the result becomes obvious. So I think that something that we have to do as text miners is really to be transparent about the methods, about the advantages. And then when you do find things that would be extremely challenging to find through other methods, or ideally you've got cases where people have looked and then you found it, that helps them be a little more convinced, that you really make sure that those successes are trumpeted.
Absolutely. And the point I think I hear you making there, John Hill, is that it's not a one solution, one size fits all. But that it is nevertheless something for everyone here. And so we really kind of have to balance that, and the organization has to ask itself, what are its goals? Where does it want to emphasize one piece of the business or another in order to use text mining for optimal results? So that's the point then, I guess, that it can be used by and for almost everyone in an organization. They need to make some choices beforehand, though, so they kind of get to results more quickly and more efficiently.
Yeah, that's a good point. So I think there's for sure advantages to centralizing it. There's also advantages to having people who are at least savvy enough about the implications of text mining to bring the right questions to the people who are doing the text mining. And so if I were to just kind of speculate on where this stuff is going, I think that one sort of category that I think is going to be on, a bit more on the horizon is extending text mining and making it more accessible. So something I've noticed with talking to my colleagues at other companies at different conferences is that a lot of basic work in text mining is re-implemented at different companies in very similar ways. So the example I presented before about co-occurrence, that's something where I guarantee that if I rounded up, you know, 8 other pharma companies, probably 7 of them have implemented something that's almost identical, maybe slightly different wrinkles around the edges, but that's a case where I think that there's a lot of options for vendors maybe even to step in and figure out these kind of common cases and make them more more robust. Same line with that, I think there's going to be more canned tools and methods. Ontologies are maybe a particularly egregious case of this, where a lot of the ontologies that we're using right now, they're designed for classification. So if you take something like Mesh or Medra, a lot of these ontologies are designed for you have a disease and you want to put it into one particular bucket. And they don't always work, or they're not structured always to work the other way, where you have your ontology and then you want to go out into free text and find all the things that match. So it's a little bit different how those have to be structured. So I think there's going to be more work being done on those, on providing more better retrieval ontologies. And something that's been a concern of text miners for years, which is picking up steam but still has a ways to go, is greater access to full text. And I think step one is going to be actually being able to access full text easily. But step two is really getting the publishers to provide more consistent metadata within full text articles, so that I could go to 5 different journals and know exactly, oh, this is how they refer to the materials and methods section. This is how they refer to a table. This is how, this is a piece in the text that refers to a figure. Those sorts of things are, some publishers do a very good job of this, but the problem is even the ones that do a good job don't do a consistent job with how the other publishers do it. So everything winds up being a little bit specialized. Web content, I think, is still a little challenging. The last thing I noticed, I think somebody actually mentioned this in the chat window. They were talking about deep learning and things like that. So I think that something that sort of is a parallel to this is that there are a lot of machine learning approaches that, machine learning can be very good for classification. And I think that there are certainly aspects of classification in how text mining is conducted. So I think that more of these kind of black box methodologies, where you may have things that were trained on a data set, you may not know exactly how it works. It's not like a query where you can inspect all the elements and say, oh yeah, I've got that synonym in there. These sorts of methodologies, I think they're a little slow to catch on because people can be skeptical of them because they don't understand them entirely. But once they prove their worth in terms of the results, then I think they'll become more and more commonplace.
Well, John, you know, I think what's interesting about this particular slide is just how you anticipated some of the questions we're seeing in the chat box here. People are asking the kinds of questions that you've been anticipating, and it gives me a sense here that this is all kind of coming to a boiling point, if you will, as far as text mining goes. And we did have a question just about that. We'll get to that in just a moment. But we'll remind people they can use the chat box to ask John Hill a question in some of the few minutes left to us right now. And, you know, John, you mentioned transparency and how important that is for text miners, the way they need to really be transparent about their activities within the organization. Likewise, you want to be transparent about the sources for some of the material and some of the ideas behind today's presentation, so we want to be sure to do that today. Some of the colleagues that you've worked with and others throughout the industry, so we certainly appreciate their hard work as well. And that gets us to the questions here. And John Hill, we'll let you take a moment to kind of catch your breath there. We certainly appreciate everybody joining us. We do have an interesting question here. Perhaps this is one that you could just mention one or two items, and maybe in a follow-up we can do a little more in depth here. But Dr. Pali is asking about some good resources and textbooks to get started on text mining. Do you have anything in your own work library there that you're particularly fond of that you want to suggest to people?
Oh, so to be honest, I found that for a lot of these things, the best sources in some cases are actually the online documentations for things. So if you go into, let's see, a couple good resources. If you're working with commercial tools, the Lingomatics documentation is fantastic. If you're interested, they have some very good webinars that are recorded, and their wiki is fantastic. I think on the open source end, I think that the Python Natural Language Toolkit has also very good documentation. I'm afraid I was very fortunate in that I'd worked with some colleagues, both Raul Rodriguez Esteban and JJ Keeling, who had quite a bit more of experience, so I was able to sort of tag along with their efforts. But I would say that in this case, the online documentation is really fantastic, and particularly for letting you, in many cases, what they'll do is they'll provide you with downloadable sets that you can look through, and then you can try to re-implement things on your own. I think for a lot of this, it's a little bit better if you can do it hands-on rather than reading about it. So if you have a chance, like with the Natural Language Toolkit, to pair up documentation and then install the stuff on your own computer, see if you can get it to work, I think that's the way to go.
And John, unfortunately, you just have about a minute to answer this rather large and speculative question from Steve, I've been saying it, so you can test me on this. Is it true? Is TDM, text data mining, really finally about to take off? As Steve points out, none of this is necessarily new. The ability has been there to do this kind of research for 15 years or so. Are we seeing business results?
Yeah, so I think that this is sort of an interesting question, and I don't know. I guess the challenge for me in thinking about this is, what does it mean if this takes off? So does it mean that the results are going to have impact, or does it mean that there's going to be a bigger organizational footprint on this? Because one thing that that I would say is that, getting to a bit of what I was talking about in the future direction slides, this is a space that's probably starting to attract more vendors and attracting more content providers. So one thing that I'm really kind of wondering about is, as the material continues to grow, I'm sure that text mining and text analytics is going to increase in size. But what's not clear to me is, does that mean that there's going to be, three more people at my company doing that sort of thing? Or does it mean that vendors are going to take more of a role in pre-text mining results out? So the companies that are already renowned for curation, so, you know, your places like Thompson Pharma or something like that, are they just going to make more aggressive use of text mining? And from the end user, we might not even know that there's text mining going into these results. I think that's still, I'm sure that text mining is going to have a big impact, but it's not clear to me what the face of that impact is going to be.
Well, a thoughtful answer and a very thoughtful presentation today from John Hill, Principal Scientist in Computational Biology at Boehringer Ingelheim Pharmaceuticals. John Hill joined us today from Connecticut, and we certainly appreciate it. Thank you so much, John.
Thanks very much for having me, Chris.
If those on the webinar today would like to learn more about text mining and some reasons to consider using text mining in their work, Copyright Clearance Center has created a white paper on that very topic, which you can download at that address there. We'll send that link to you in a follow-up email after today's webinar. I think that might be a handy item to have with you, and perhaps to share around your office or organization as you begin to think more seriously about text mining in your own work. To contact Copyright Clearance Center, we are online at copyright.com, the email address at info@copyright.com. John Hill also welcomes your questions and comments directly to him there in Ridgefield, Connecticut. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for joining us.